This is NBC Nightly News, Tuesday, January 9th. Reported by John Chancellor with David Brinkley's Journal.
Good evening. On the program tonight, we'll be covering some bad news about wholesale prices and even worse news about wholesale farm prices. We'll have reports from Chicago and Cleveland on that story. We'll be going to Paris for the ceasefire talks. Not much good news there either. And to Washington for the confirmation hearing on Elliot Richardson, named to be Secretary of Defense. We'll have a special report on the status of the B-52 bombers used in the recent attacks on Hanoi and Haiphong. And the news begins with the New Orleans story. The shooting, which echoed through downtown New Orleans on Sunday and Monday, is not now over, but there are still several mysteries about what happened at the Howard Johnson downtown hotel. They have the body of a sniper who tied up the whole New Orleans police force for a couple of days, and they have identified the body, but they don't know if the dead man had an accomplice, and if he did, how he got away. They do know that a sniper's rifle found on a rooftop was used to murder a police cadet on New Year's Eve, but there are still some puzzles in this case. Fred Briggs reports from New Orleans.
The downtown Central Business District was doing business as usual today. The 50-block area cordoned off yesterday was open again. So were all the stores and businesses. Even the Howard Johnson's Motor Lodge was open to an extent. Guests who had to be evacuated in haste Sunday were allowed to come back and at least check out. The return to normalcy came because it appeared the danger of a second sniper had vanished. For that matter, the second sniper himself has vanished, and the debate now is all about whether there really ever was a second sniper. Police spent 5 hours last night on a room-to-room, floor-to-floor search, beginning at the roof and working on down to the lobby. They even looked at the air conditioning vents in each room. They are rather small, but then the second sniper could have been rather small, too. It seems to be a very difficult to accept the idea that just one man could have set these fires, caused such a panic, and stood off the entire police department of the city of New Orleans. But it is equally hard to accept the idea that that same man could get out of that building when it was occupied by hundreds of policemen. There are some who claim they saw a second man. Joe Manguna, a reporter with the United Press International, was in an upper story of a building across the way with four policemen Sunday night. He saw one sniper run from a bunker-like enclosure and get shot down by gunfire from a police helicopter.
As the helicopter was beginning to pull off to its left, a silhouette of a face and a rifle barrel came out of the side of the bunker and fired two shots. There were two flashes, muzzle flashes, from the gun in the direction of the helicopter. He yelled, "Power to the people, power to the people," and then an obscenity, which I could hear echo, you know, through the thing.
We have a little book written up for you.
There was a funeral service today for one of the four policemen killed by the sniper on Sunday, Patrolman Paul Persigo. He was one of the first officers to arrive on the scene. He was the first officer to die, and the first funeral was his. There will be three more such funerals tomorrow. Fred Briggs, NBC News, New Orleans.
The dead sniper has been identified as a 23-year-old veteran of the U.S. Navy whose name is Mark Essex, and this is what he looked like in high school a few years ago. Essex is from Emporia, Kansas, and police there say they have no record of his ever having been in trouble. The New Orleans police say Essex had been living in the New Orleans area for the last 6 months. For more on the dead sniper, here's a report from Kansas City.
Emporia was stunned that one of its own was accused as the sniper killer. It was late afternoon before most of the city heard the news, and then almost everyone was certain there must be some mistake. But in the quiet, racially mixed neighborhood where Mark Jimmy Essex grew up, it was obvious there was no mistake. By mid-morning, according to police, the family had left the home trying to avoid the press and possible harm. At the home, on the corner, just across the street from the William Allen White Elementary School, the family dog, a German Shepherd, waited. Neighbors who know and love the family would add little to the story. Many just wouldn't talk. But one man had this to say.
They're good, reliable people. They're well-liked and well-thought of in this community.
Did you know the children?
Yes. They had five children. far as I know, there's Timothy and Jimmy and Benjamin, and there was two girls. Penny, I think, was the youngest girl's name.
What do the parents do?
The mother, I think, was dietitian to high school, but now I think she's with some care program.
What about the father?
He's works down to the slaughterhouse south in Emporia.
And a development like this then would come as quite a shock to you.
Oh, my goodness, yes. It's unbelievable to us, because they're good Christian people, well thought of.
NBC Nightly News is brought to you by Vicks Cough Drops. If you want to lick a little cough, you've got to pack a little wallop.
So you want to lick a little cough, you better pack a little wallop. New flavor Vicks Menthol Eucalyptus Cough Drops. These babies don't taste like candy. They taste like they mean business. You can feel them go to work to soothe the irritation from your cough. New flavor Vicks Menthol Eucalyptus Cough Drops. If you want to lick a little cough, you better back a little wallop.
Look at the two of them. It's hard to believe the last time Kathy stayed with us, she said, "Sometimes Grandpa is such a sourpuss." Well, Howard was irritable, but that's because he was constipated, and the laxatives he tried were either too harsh or just not effective. Then I brought home Saratan. Saratan's made from natural ingredients, and it's gentle. But does Saratan really work? Well, would you call that man a sourpuss?
The government today reported very sharp wholesale price rises last month. Wholesale prices overall went up 1.8%. That's the biggest one-month rise since 1951. Wholesale farm prices went up even more, 6.8%. That's the biggest monthly increase in 25 years. Most farm prices are not controlled under the Phase 2 economic program. For all of last year, the rises in wholesale prices was 6.5%. For wholesale farm prices, 18.7%. Here are two reports in the Midwest on retail and wholesale prices.
Farmers had expected a bumper crop of grain and soybeans in the Midwest until the weather turned against them. Seven straight weeks of autumn rain destroyed more than half the crop. Those fields not underwater couldn't be harvested because the muddy ground wouldn't support the heavy farm machinery used to bring it in, and so more crops rotted. For several weeks now, the fields have been frozen hard enough to allow farmers to do some harvesting. But now, this late, the harvesting is little more than a salvage operation, bringing in that small percentage of crops that has not been damaged by the long stand in wet fields. At first, farmers thought they could salvage 40% of the crop. But now, because the cold weather has severely damaged soybeans still in the field, and because the moisture level in grains remains high, they are doubtful of saving even a third of the expected crop. Have you ever seen anything as bad as this?
Well, I'm probably still a youngster at farming, but any of the fellows that have been around here for a good number of years said this is the worst year they've ever seen.
The weather is also being blamed for pushing cattle prices higher. When it's cold, cattle don't eat well, but burn more calories to keep warm. So ranchers must wait longer until the cattle fatten and can be shipped to market. The increased farm prices will, of course, result in higher prices for the consumer. For a report on that, here's John Harrington.
Because the weather was so hard on grain crops this year, the shopper will pay more. Poultry and beef raisers are paying more for feed. The customer is paying more at the counter. Egg prices went up more than 20 cents a dozen in the last 3 months. Milk is now, or soon will be, 4 to 5 cents more a gallon in some large cities. Poultry has gone up 7 cents in the past 10 days. Pork is at a near record high, and in some stores, beef is 8% above the record price of last July. A Cleveland supermarket operator says he's caught in the middle and can only sympathize with his customers.
The only way I can describe it is just absolutely ridiculous. The cost of meat and so on at the wholesale level is just going up so fast. There's no way we can raise prices at the retail level fast enough.
When do you expect these increases to stop?
I really don't. I have no indication they will stop, and Now, for instance, next week there's supposed to be a little dip in the market, and then it's supposed to go even higher.
Economists say that even with the record prices, most Americans probably will not revolt. They'll just continue to pay the bill. John Harrington, NBC News, Cleveland.
Agriculture Secretary Earl Butz told reporters today that he cringed when he heard the bad news on prices. But in an interview with Irving R. Levine, Butz had some explanations for the rise in food prices.
We've had a very strong consumer demand for foods. This has been a principal factor, I think, in pushing the price of meats up, for example. Purchasing power is high, employment is high, wages are high. We're putting out $2 billion a year in food stamps, which increases purchasing power at the lower end of the income spectrum. This is a place where people spend a lot of their dollars for food, and that means they all like to eat steak, and there's only so much steak in the carcass. In 1972, we had nearly 60 million acres that were not in production of farm crops, wheat or feed crops. Next year, we're going to pull about 12 million of those acres back into production. To encourage farmers to idle those 60 million acres last year, we paid approximately $4 billion to farmers, primarily our wheat farmers and cotton and feed grain farmers and corn farmers. Next year, we're going to reduce those payments by somewhere between $1 and $1.5 billion, and we expect about 12 million acres to come back into production to increase the supplies of wheat and soybeans and corn and feed grains, so that we'll have plenty of feed for our livestock and more livestock and dairy products and poultry products for our consumers.
The White House said today that President Nixon will not go up to Capitol Hill to deliver the annual State of the Union message to Congress. That's not without precedent. Other presidents have done it occasionally. In Mr. Nixon's case, however, the decision not to deliver the message personally may have special significance. It could be a sign of the increasing distance and tension between him and the Congress.
I'm not for hire.
You haven't heard the financial terms.
Value that $10,000 a page. It's not the Sunday magazine section. When a priceless art treasure is stolen, Banachek goes to work.
You've been on the case 20 minutes. Haven't you got any brilliant theories yet?
A rare book. Somebody killed to get it, and they'll kill again to keep it, as Banachek becomes the target in a deadly plot. George Peppard is Banachek in a tense 90-minute drama with guest star Stella Stevens on the NBC Wednesday Mystery Movie at 8:30, 7:30 Central Time, followed by Search.
Where is my sister? Carla.
Now, you won't believe this, but I seem to have misplaced her.
Should we follow?
No. No need. The man is dead.
Lesson number one for a probe. Don't misplace someone's sister when she's worth $5 billion. Dead. Lesson number two, misplace her better than this. Watch Search starring Doug McClure Wednesday night on NBC.
In Paris today, Henry Kissinger of the White House and Le Duc Tho of North Vietnam held their second meeting this week. No one knows what's being said exactly, but there are indications that there are three basic issues still unresolved. One is the question of whether there is one Vietnam or two Vietnams. Another issue is the terms for prisoner return. The third issue is the size of the international peacekeeping force. Our Paris correspondent, Lloyd Dobbins, covered today's meeting, and here is his report.
Today's meeting was at Saint-Nom-la-Bretèche, west of Paris, in the home of an American which borders an expensive and exclusive private golf club. Henry Kissinger and the American delegation, as host for today's meeting, arrived first. It was the start of a six-hour session about which nothing has been said. French sources who are close to these private meetings have said that real problems remain. One of the real problems facing Kissinger is to find some formula that will satisfy South Vietnam's insistence that it is a separate nation and Hanoi's insistence that all of Vietnam is one nation. Xuan Thuy, who returned today to his habit of waving to cameramen, and Le Duc Tho are reportedly ready to make concessions on other issues, but not on the issue of reunification of Vietnam, no matter how vaguely worded the agreement might be. Two other issues known to exist are the release of American prisoners and the size of the peacekeeping force. Neither side will say whether those were the issues discussed during today's meeting, but whatever was discussed, the mood afterwards seemed to be better. While the meeting went on today, French President Georges Pompidou said at a news conference, "I hope the talks will succeed, and they must succeed." He said he hoped what would not happen was an eternal series of discussions in Paris and bombing raids in North Vietnam.
Nothing has been said publicly, but both sides are reported to believe that a peaceful settlement is possible and even probable. But both sides will have to give a little, particularly on the issue of one or two Vietnams. Lloyd Dobbins, NBC News, Paris.
The North Vietnamese in Hanoi were saying today there has not been any sign that the negotiations will reach any results. And the North Vietnamese government has issued new orders for military and economic measures in the event of new bombing north of the 20th parallel. B-52s bombed in North Vietnam today, but below the 20th parallel. In Washington, Admiral Thomas Moore, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said the recent bombing of Hanoi and Haiphong effectively damaged North Vietnam's ability to wage war in the South. Moore did not contradict North Vietnam's claim that from 1,300 to 1,800 civilians died in the bombing. He said he believes a large number were employed in jobs at military targets. Also in Washington today, Elliot Richardson, President Nixon's choice to be the new Secretary of Defense, told a congressional committee that he supports the bombing policy. John Cochran reports on that story.
Richardson said he believes in a liberal policy of providing military information to the public. Committee members said they were glad to hear it, but they quickly found that at least one military subject, the bombing of North Vietnam, was off limits.
Is it your belief that the continued and possibly increased bombing of cities like Hanoi is necessary to obtain the release of American POWs and those missing in action?
It seems to me impossible to answer that question without getting into what Secretary Laird referred to as the negotiating track.
Do you believe that continued bombing above the 20th parallel is necessary to the security and prosperity of the United States? And if so, why do you believe that?
The question of means and judgment that has been exercised in the choice of means is so integrally related to the problems of negotiating process that I cannot appropriately comment further.
As I interpreted the Senator from Missouri's question relative to the security and the well-being of our nation and bombing of the north of the 20th parallel, it was not answered. Interpreting your reply to be that you will not answer it this morning in a direct fashion, am I correct in interpreting that?
I think it's fair to say that you are correct, Senator Hughes.
The people of North Vietnam know what happened in Hanoi and Haiphong. The embassies of the other nations of the world have informed their own people what we have been doing there, but we, the American people, have no information relative to what we have been doing there. And I, for the life of me, fail to understand why we cannot be informed.
Richardson's confirmation is virtually assured, but several committee members think he should state flatly whether he approved of the president's decision to bomb Hanoi. And tomorrow, they will put that same question to Richardson again. John Cochran, NBC News at the Capitol.
The main American weapon in the recent carpet bombing of the Hanoi-Haiphong area referred to there was the B-52 bomber. The Strategic Air Command uses B-52s, which carry nuclear weapons, but the planes used over North Vietnam drop high explosives. They are relatively old airplanes, and there are only about 200 of them available for these missions. Nearly one-tenth of that force was lost over North Vietnam in 2 weeks. Roy Neal has more details on what this means for the Air Force.
B-52s carry an immense load of bombs, 60,000 pounds, six times as many as a fighter bomber. They are the only heavy bombers in the United States arsenal. The B-52s began flying over Vietnam more than 7 years ago. In 7 years, only one was lost in combat. But the missions were flown against lightly defended targets. Recently, almost the whole force of available B-52s was sent in to hit Hanoi and Haiphong. The Pentagon calls this the most heavily defended area in the world, defended particularly by SAM missiles designed by Russia specifically to knock down B-52s. In the Haiphong area alone, it's been reported that there are more than 156 SAM missile launchers, plus a heavy concentration of anti-aircraft guns, many of them radar-controlled. At least 16 B-52s were shot down in about 2 weeks. Others were damaged so badly they had to be scrapped. Officials say the loss rate per mission was less than expected, but the overall effect was something else. There were only about 200 B-52s available and equipped to fly with conventional bombs. So the United States has lost at least 8% of its force, and these airplanes cannot be replaced. The newest B-52 came off the Boeing production line in Wichita, Kansas, more than 10 years ago. Since then, the Air Force has used this facility to manufacture spare parts and to make modification kits to update the bombers. For example, here in 1966, about 150 B-52s were converted to carry conventional bombs for service in Southeast Asia. Today, production of this and other facilities is dedicated to keeping the B-52s flying, but no new ones are being built. The old bombers are refurbished, painted, and sent back into service. B-52s do a good job, but they still represent 1940 technology against 1970 defenses. The successor to the B-52s, the B-1, it's designed to evade modern enemy missiles and defend itself against modern enemy fighters. It will fly more than twice as fast and carry almost twice as many bombs. But the production line for the B-1 is just tooling up to build the first flight test model to fly in 1974. Then, if the Air Force is given a go-ahead to build the B-1, it will be at least 2 years before production can begin. So the first B-1 can't be operational until 1978, and these planes would not be available in quantity until the 1980s. The Air Force says the B-52s must keep on flying until 1985. With almost 10% of the available force shot down in recent raids, it seems doubtful the United States will do much more saturation bombing over North Vietnam. Roy Neal, NBC News, Los Angeles.
In a decision which some will say is a further invasion of the privacy of individuals, the Supreme Court ruled today that the government has the right to make bookkeepers and accountants turn over the tax records of their clients. Senator Stuart Symington of Missouri said today that mainland China is on the verge of becoming a superpower from the standpoint of missiles. Symington said his information came from outgoing CIA Director Richard Helms, who briefed the Senate Armed Services Committee on Chinese capabilities. The Nixon administration today continued its cutback on government-subsidized housing. It ended low-interest housing loans for low-income rural families. The Food and Drug Administration said today its tests show more than 8% of the bottled water sold for human consumption fails to meet national health standards. The tests indicated bacteria in excess of public service standards. The trading was moderate today on the stock markets and prices were off. The Dow Jones Industrials lost almost a point. On the New York Exchange, the average price of a share lost 5 cents. On the American Exchange, the average price of a share lost 1 cent. Today was President Nixon's 60th birthday. He celebrated it with his family at the White House. Only his son-in-law, Lieutenant David Eisenhower, was not there, and he's on duty with the Navy. The president's staff sent him 60 red roses, and he ate more than dinner for dinner than he usually does.
'Not everyone is cut out for a career of helping people. That's why State Farm looks for the kind of man who already wants to serve. But before he got to be a State Farm agent, he went through a careful selection process. Hours of study, interviews, work sessions. For every 9 who apply, only 1 makes it and becomes a State Farm agent.
Just like a good neighbor.
Got a nasty, tickling, scratching, annoying cough from a cold. And you can't sleep if you're coughing. So you say to yourself, I will not cough. And you try to suppress it yourself. But you can't. You need a strong cough medicine. Vicks Formula 44. Formula 44 can help suppress the cough you can't suppress. Formula 44 is a cough suppressant as effective as codeine, but not narcotic. Formula 44 can help suppress the cough you can't suppress.
Finally tonight, David Brinkley's Journal. Brinkley has spent the day today reflecting on the fact that the new year is now 9 days old. David?
The Happy New Year everybody was wishing everybody a few days ago is now here, and so far it is not all that great. January 9th, a Tuesday, about as near nothing a day as there is in the year. The weather is bad, but the worst of it is still ahead. The holidays are over, and now the bills are arriving by the pound. Also arriving are neat little packets from Internal Revenue with a cheery little message saying how lucky you are that a third to a half or more of what you have worked to earn can now be handed over to the bureaucrats to squander. The sanitation department is hauling away the Christmas trees, mostly bare branches now with their needles gone and little bits of tinsel still hung in them. Youngsters home from school have now left, taking with them enough food to feed a pack of timber wolves for 3 months, but they'll eat it all in a week. The television screens are full of drugstore medications for coughs, colds, chills, fevers, drips, headaches, sore throats. We figure that 14% of American households have somebody in bed with a cold or flu or something, and at the end of the day, you could almost heat the house by burning the Kleenex. And except for next Sunday's Super Bowl on NBC, the weekend football is over, and those addicted to it are having the same withdrawal pains known to other addicts deprived of whatever it is they are addicted to. Sunday afternoons now, instead of football, you may see a lot of professors sitting around a coffee table having a boring discussion of the gross national product, smoking pipes, clearing their throats a lot, and saying the Vietnam War is terrible. Well, January 9th, a real nothing day. The war may or may not ever end, but the good news is that spring absolutely will arrive in 2 months and 12 days, March 21st. John?
Well, tomorrow may be better. Good night for NBC News.